This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 21st of December 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 20th December 2012, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Jane Harding.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Matt Avery.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcements this week. But I'm just looking for the lighting up times, which I have now found. Today, Friday, the 21st of December, the sun rose at 7 minutes past eight in the morning and will set at just after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Wednesday of next week, that's the 26th, date's not all that different. Sun will rise just before 10 past eight in the morning and will set just after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines this week in the Hampshire Chronicle are Yuletide Rush is boosted by Xmas Market. We are owed thousands, claim angry customers. And Camilla wins hearts at Emmaus. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
And the first headline, Yuletide Rush is boosted by Christmas Market. Big names lure shoppers with discounts. Winchester's independent traders are in bullish mood this Christmas, whilst the High Street's big names are resorting to early discounts. Footfall on the High Street in the first 2 weeks of December was up 19% on last year, largely thanks to the increasing draw of the Christmas market, with many independent shops seeing the benefits at the tills. The news comes in the wake of a report by accountants, PricewaterhouseCoopers, which showed that 64% of high street chains advertised promotions in the first week of December, the biggest number of discounts since the start of the recession in 2008. In Winchester, several chains are offering big discounts, with clothes shops River Island and Laura Ashley running half-price deals, Debenhams offering up to 50% off on some items, and Boots offering 3-for-2 promotions. But there is a clear divide in Winchester between the national chains and the independent traders. Tony Wyman, owner of toy shop Childhood's Dream in Southgate Street, said, "We've not gone in for pre-Christmas promotions because we've managed our stock so that we don't have to. We're 23% up on last year. The increase in foot flow has meant an increase in sales. Our main threat comes from Amazon, though. It's totally destructive of business models. But that isn't to say that it's been easy for independents." Maria Holbrook, managing the toy cupboard in St George's Street, said, "We have offers on where we cut prices, but as an independent shop we can't afford to do things like 3-for-2, so we can't compete with the High Street. Everywhere you look on the High Street at the moment is sales, sales, sales." Alice Phillips, manager at Crewe Clothing in Market Street, which has dozens of outlets across the UK, said, "At the moment I couldn't say I've noticed a 19% increase in footfall. It just feels about the same as last year. We did have pre-Christmas promotions on last year, but we've noticed some other competitors of ours putting promotions up, and it seems to be in response to other people on the High Street doing it." But Lucy Coles, director at the Hambledon in the Square, said, Foot flow is up massively, although there's been a significant downturn in average spend. We've not gone in for pre-Christmas sales because we don't need to. We just have two sales at Christmas and we stick to that. There was mixed news on Parchment Street, where footfall has been dropping in recent years. Liz Daravalla of Bell Fine Art said, "It's busy and people are shopping, but it's not easy. Shoppers' target prices are a lot less, and they only get the little things. It's been worse than last year." Celeste Ponzolini, proprietor of Forme, said, "This is a really happy time, and we've done much better than last year so far. We have been here for 14 years, so we have very loyal customers, and they always come back." Kevin Hurd of the Clock Workshop, "It's been a really difficult year. The country is bankrupt and people aren't spending. We sell to a very wealthy clientele, and they are being careful with their money. We've been here 16 years, but the economic climate is affecting us." Elle Goss, of director of Boudoir Blush since September, said, "We're doing better than last year, and we're in profit last month. So far, we're doing very well for Christmas." Chris Turner, executive director of the Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said, "Most certainly, the Christmas sales are starting earlier. Some of the independents are having to work hard, but anecdotally, our traders are very busy. Restaurants are busy and the town is very, very busy." Figures from the British Retail Consortium showed that in the first week of December nationwide, the number of shoppers was down 1.7% year on year. "We've had some ups and downs, but Winchester has been bucking the trend for years," Mr. Turner said.
And the second headline is, "We're owed thousands," claim angry customers. "We want our money back." That was the message from several angry customers of Prospect Auction Rooms in Alsford last Friday, December the 14th. Some say they're owed thousands of pounds after their goods were sold before the business collapsed last month. Manager Charlie Evans says he is not to blame and that the receivers are due soon to work out the debts. Customers were invited to collect goods from the building between noon and 2 p.m, but many were left disappointed. Anne Lacey, 73, of Greens Close, Bishop's Waltham, said, "I have had a disgusting experience here. I'm owed £1,700 for selling all sorts of things to help pay for me to move to Norfolk. I gave 9-carat gold jewellery, as well as a lot of furniture to sell. I was really, really upset, because I've known Charlie for years, and he said he could get me money for it. I even found a picture I gave him as a present buried beneath other items. This is a kick in the teeth." Meanwhile, Brenda Totterdell, 76, of Winchester Road, Waltham Chase, said she was owed £400 for items belonging to her late husband, Douglas, who died of cancer in June, aged 86. She said, "My husband was always a bit of a hoarder, and I had a leak in my house, so I thought I could sell some of his things to pay for it. I found out £400 worth was sold, and I phoned up again and again to get the money, to no reply. It's been very emotional, and it's bad enough losing my husband to have this happen on top of it, but I'm angry more than anything." It has also emerged that Mr. Evans has submitted plans to Winchester City Council for a change of use of the furniture warehouse in Eastern Lane, Winnell, to an auction room. Vicky Fletcher, a retired HR director of Compton near Winchester, collecting furniture and cabinets, said, "I reckon I'm owed around £600 for what's been sold, and I feel I've been conned. They must have known the business was in trouble, so there's been a lack of transparency, and to think they will set up a new one is not fair." Melanie Priest, 40, of Botley, who was there to collect 5 boxes of various household goods, added, "I've heard a new business is being set up in Winchester. It's absolutely ridiculous." Mr. Evans was not on site and has been unavailable for comment since the application was submitted 2 weeks ago. But some customers defended him and said the business had traded successfully for years before these problems. Sophia Kidd, 54, a housewife of Itchin Abbas, collecting furniture and an Edwardian chandelier, said, "Everyone has forgotten that when Mr. Evans set up the business, he looked after us very well, and I was a happy customer for 2 years. I understand people are upset because they're owed money, but it's very sad, really, as it was a good business run by nice people." Jamie Freeth added, "No one wants to go out of business or have this sort of thing happen. It's a shame because it was a brilliant auction rooms." Trading Standards again refused to confirm whether it was investigating the incident. A spokesman said, "Under the Enterprise Act, we are unable to disclose if Trading Standards are investigating any individual or organisation, as it could impact on those investigations. We are, however, interested in hearing from anyone who has concerns about their dealings with the company, and would ask people to contact Trading Standards via the Citizens Advice Consumer Service on 08454 040506. I'll read that again. 08454 040506.
And the next headline is Camilla wins hearts at Emmaus. The Duchess of Cornwall was in Winchester on Thursday and couldn't resist the opportunity for some Christmas shopping. Camilla is royal patron of Emmaus, a charity providing both work and accommodation for homeless people. Residents at the centre in Bar End, or companions as they are known, restore furniture donated by the public before selling it on. And after a guided tour, she stopped to purchase 2 wooden toy boxes for her grandchildren. "I love coming to Emmaus," she said. "They have the most wonderful atmosphere, and I just wish I could have more time to shop." It was the second time the Duchess had visited the Winchester site, and she was impressed by their progress. "Having seen it in its embryonic form, it's so nice to see it like this," she said. The Duchess was accompanied on the tour by Terry Waite, president of the charity. After taking a look around the bedrooms, Mr. Waite, who came to public attention after being held hostage in Lebanon for nearly 5 years, joked, "It's a lot better than my accommodation in Beirut." The future Queen Consort chatted to residents and had an early Christmas present for 40-year-old Steve Gibson, who has been at Emmaus for 3 years. He said, "She gave me a bag full of stuff from the Duchy of Cornwall. She was a very, very nice person. I used to work in a shop, but couldn't handle it. But since I've come and worked in the shop here, I've been fine. I feel I could go out and work now." The Bar End community accommodates 26 companions, and there are 24 Emmaus communities across the UK, with plans for at least 10 more. Many are in areas such as Manchester or Liverpool. Emmaus Chief Executive, Arvinda Gohill, said, "Winchester is a small place, but we provide communities in all places. It's about identifying places where you can make the enterprise successful, and Winchester does that." And this article is accompanied by a lovely picture of the Duchess enjoying a joke with some of the companions, and she's wearing a bright red coat and matching brooch.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bell, Alan W. A. Bell, on the 21st of November. Burroughs, Peggy Burroughs, on the 14th of December. Carey, William Henry, known as Harry Carey, on the 8th of December, aged 98. Joshua, Doreen Florence Joshua, on the 5th of December, in hospital, aged 76. Lazzaroni, Joan Lazzaroni, on the 16th of December, aged 89. Lewis, Charles William Lewis, on the 8th of December, aged 67. Robinson, Jennifer Elfrida Marguerite, known as Jenny Robinson, on the 3rd of December, at home, aged 76. Walsh, Doris Evelyn Walsh, on the 9th of December, aged 101. And Wells, Joan Esther Wells, on the 14th of December, at Westlands 4 Marks, aged 90. And next we have Christian Comment.
And Christian Comment this week is written by Terry E. Hemming and is headed, "Don't Let Evil Have the Last Word." Last week I had 5 funerals, and although losing someone you love is always difficult, there is something even more poignant when it occurs near a time of festivity. How can you rejoice with everyone else when there is such a gnawing pain in your own heart? How can you ignore the hole left behind? Even if we have not experienced our own bereavements, that thought must come up as we contemplate the terrible killings at the school in the United States. Equally, it is true across the world when we think of the situation in Syria, the plight of children in battle zones, and in many areas which hardly merit a mention in our news. Can we celebrate good news when we are so conscious of bad news? The first Christmas was a time of rejoicing, but if we read the story closely, we realise it was rejoicing only amongst a few. Jesus was born where the animals were housed, hidden from the world's eyes. Only a few shepherds and some wise men from the Orient are recorded as joining Mary and Joseph in their delight, although there was a crowd of angels who shared the secret also. Outside Bethlehem, the strong-arm tactics of the Roman Empire continued to be practised, and the revolts of the freedom fighters matched violence with violence. Let us remember that crucifixion was not invented for Easter. A few days after we celebrate Christmas, we commemorate the massacre of the innocents, when King Herod, in his insecurity, ordered the slaughter of all young male infants. So, just what is it about Christmas that allows us to celebrate in such a violent and uncertain world? It is because of hope. The people of God have been waiting down the ages for someone to come and rescue them, and the angels announced that that person had now come. Most found it difficult to believe that God would come in such an unprepossessing form. They could not see God as a helpless baby who became a religious teacher in a far-flung province of the empire and a political victim killed as a criminal. Down the ages since then, this belief has been the hope of millions of believers. God has started something new and given us an expectation. At the funerals of last week, we mourned not as those who did not believe, but as those who believed in Jesus' power and in God working. Yes, we mourned, but not hopelessly. So, this Christmas, let us renew our hope that evil does not have the last word, and then share that gently with those who have a shadow over their celebrations.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can do it in the traditional way by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
So we now have the first letter.
Which is from Alistair Marsden, who thinks it's time that Winchester championed buses. Sir, recent reporting of the high levels of pollution gives even more credence to the need for buses to be the motorised transport of choice for the vast majority of people travelling into Winchester. Whilst the economics of the park and ride service is clear, this cannot be said for the non-commuter on stagecoach buses. A standard return from Stanmore to the city, around 1.5 miles, costs £3.50, 60% more than equivalent fares in Chichester and Basingstoke. This is more costly than using a car. Short-term parking in the city ranges from free for up to 30 minutes on Sundays and after 6 p.m. to £3 for 3 hours. If you own a car, it seems self-evident that you would not opt for a bus. Ironically, the less well-off have no alternative and often end up paying more than the more affluent to get into town. The real economic benefits are realised when buses are used in high volumes by a diverse demographic. This permits both lower fares, fixed costs to spread over a wider base, and a better service, driven by a more demanding customer requiring more regular services over an extended timetable. Countries like Switzerland lead the way in this. Even rich bankers use buses in Switzerland. It's time we followed the Swiss lead. Other towns like Oxford have already done so. The upcoming new developments like Barton Farm and Pitt Manor make this even more critical. We need visible political leadership to champion the buses, to coordinate the numerous stakeholders, and to focus on better bus outcomes rather than process. Fortunately, because the same political parties run the city and county councils and provide the MP, this should be straightforward. It would be good to hear from them on how they plan to address this. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
The next letter is titled Balance Between Right and Wrong, and it's from Hazel Agomba. Sir, your article, Give Us Cleaner Air, Not Hot Air, December the 6th, which covered the launch of a complaint being made to the European Commission in relation to illegal levels of air pollution in Winchester, contained a quote from Rob Heathcock for the City Council. He is reported as saying, "Actions to improve air quality have to be carefully introduced in order to strike a balance between the need for access to maintain the economic vitality of the city and the need to reduce levels of pollution." At a recent Cabinet meeting, in relation to the same plea for action on air pollution, both the leader of the City Council and the transport portfolio holder expressed the same thought, using exactly the same word, balance. Balance has a nice sense of reasonableness about it. But what does it really mean? Do politicians think it reasonable to find a balance between right and wrong, between good and bad? What Winchester City Council is saying in this instance is that it is important to find a balance between poisoning children and the rest of us in the city and some imagined economic benefit from doing so. But more specifically, they are saying here that it is important to find a balance between breaking the law and not breaking it. Would anyone appearing in our magistrates' courts this week care to try this defence? And that's from Hazel Agomba of Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And Richard Grant writes, "Shift Parliament back to Winchester." Sir, Winchester used to be the capital of Wessex and considered one of the most important locations in the entire country. With the present government looking for construction projects to provide employment, I suggest that Parliament itself should relocate within easy access off the M3, with a branch line from the main railway, a helipad, and a short airstrip for small private aeroplanes of only high-ranking politicians. There could be a hotel complex for MPs to stay, with special suites for overseas leaders, all screened by woodland and with the eco-built buildings part submerged to have a grass roof. Let's get those MPs out of London, place them into a rural setting, and maybe they will not feel the stress of city life. I appreciate it will cost a fortune, but once constructed it will be available possibly for centuries. The Palace of Westminster can't cope with a modern-day Parliament and with its old-fashioned approach. We just end up with old-fashioned thinking politicians. And that was from Richard Grant of Biston Close in Burley.
Station car parking already impossible, writes Rosemary Poole. Sir, I read with dismay the news that developers have been eyeing up sites around Winchester Railway Station for possible development. As it is already impossible for non-commuters to use the station car park on weekdays, it is surely essential that the existing parking spaces be left as car parks, and indeed more spaces provided on any available adjacent land, especially with the Barton Farm development in view. That's from Rosemary Poole, St James Villas, Winchester.
Jeff Ward writes, no incentive to catch speeders. Sir, with reference to the letter column in the Chronicle last week, the fact that 1,700 motorists exceeded the speed limit over a three-day period does not demonstrate beyond doubt that the speed limit in Hursley is too low. Rather, it merely demonstrates that the only factor influencing compliance with the law is the possibility of getting caught. Laws can be unenforceable, and the law can be an ass, so fight to change it. But don't use non-compliance as a reason to ignore it. Further, as far as I am aware, speed cameras are placed where they are as a result of analysis of accidents, fatalities, etc., or as a result of an assessment by experienced traffic officers. The decision to place them is made locally. The income goes to central government. So where is the income-raising incentive? And that was from Jeff Ward of Walton Place, Stanmore in Winchester.
And Rob Parker writes, fracking is another stopgap measure. Sir, Douglas Paterson, letters November 1929, urges increasing use of gas extracted from the ground by the fracking method as an energy source for Hampshire. Injecting water under pressure into the strata beneath our feet, laced with diesel fuel and other carcinogenic chemicals, can have serious consequences for our reserves of drinking water. Once contaminated, the water cannot be purified back to potable use. Island Gas PLC already has a petroleum exploration licence for areas around Sparsholt, Littleton and Avington. Other licences have been granted for the wider Hampshire area, including Botley, Eastleigh, Chilbolton and Hedge End. We could even be a step nearer to this becoming a local reality now that tax breaks subsidy have been promised for the fracking industry. I think Mr. Paterson should review his ideas about promoting this energy source. It is finite and only another dangerous stopgap measure which does nothing to help future generations. The only renewable source of energy is derived from the sun, wind and water. And that was Rob Parker, Back Street, St Cross, Winchester.
We can be proud of our hospital, writes Elizabeth Temple of Stowe. Sir, in response to the recent hail of criticism of the NHS, we are writing to express our deep appreciation of the excellent care we have had at our own local hospital, the RHCH in Winchester. My husband recently spent more than 3 weeks there, and I was in only for day surgery. We found the thoughtful and considerate attention of all the staff quite outstanding. The nurses' constant concern for the care of their patients was very touching, as was their cheerfulness, their compassion, and what appeared to be their endless patience and willingness to help each and every patient. It all created a most positive atmosphere of optimism. Visitors were impressed by the shining floors and general cleanliness, and I must put in a good word for the food, which was so well presented and appetizing, with fresh vegetables every day, including a perfectly cooked simple cauliflower, the aim, I suspect, of many a famous chef. Our grateful thanks and praise must also go to all the members of the ambulance service, who unfailingly turn out at all times of the day and night. They are always sympathetic, reassuring, and extremely competent, and we should be lost without them. All in all, I think we can be proud of our hospital, and certainly grateful to those who keep it running so successfully in these very difficult times. That letter is from Elizabeth Temple of Stowe, Easton, Winchester.
Cut pollution by staying out of city, writes Phil Gagg. Sir, Peter Mitchell offered no answer to Winchester's pollution problems, letters December the 13th. Moving the monitoring equipment away from the road would be the worst type of cheating, like slowing down a stopwatch to gain a world athletics record. The City Council is to be applauded for its honesty and deserves our full support for any measures it takes. Our high levels of nitrous dioxide pollution increase the incidence of asthma and other respiratory diseases. We must do everything we can to preserve our health and the health of our children. Pollution in Winchester is considerable and should not be laughed away. Reported roadside levels in St George's Street, Jewellery Street and Romsey Road are even higher than levels reported for Holloway Road, Islington, and Mile End Road, Tower Hamlets. I call on responsible motorists to step away from the one-way system and central car parks, and park at the gates of the city in Tower Street, Cattle Market, Derngate, Chesil, or in Park and Ride. This would 1. Save money. 2. Save time. A few minutes extra walk or a bus ride will save time wasted in traffic jams. 3. Provide regular exercise that would stave off obesity, muscular atrophy and heart problems, an approach promoted heavily by the National Institute of Public Health and Clinical Excellence. 4. Reduce hospital admissions for asthma and other respiratory diseases. 5. Increase footfall in less congested areas for the unfortunate traders in Bridge Street, Southgate Street, Jewellery Street, St George's Street and Parchment Street, who miss out on the traffic-free Christmas bonanza in the rest of Winchester. 6. Make more space where they need to park, for disabled badge holders and for people loading heavy goods. 7. Make space for housing in central Winchester. What is there not to like about this proposal? Everybody gains, nobody loses. And that was a letter from Phil Gagg of Fairfield Road, Fulford, Winchester.
And Peter Stewart writes a letter headed More Accidents in 20-mile-per-hour Zones. Sir, so now we know why Tory councillors are so keen to implement the Lib Dems 20-mile-per-hour zones. At first I thought it was just coalition fever, but now average speed cameras are being tested and councillors envisage them for Highcliffe, Stanmore and Winnall, Chronicle December the 6th. Everyone knows that low speed limits are for extorting speeding fines. At the county elections next year, motorists may show their contempt, judging from the recent Rotherham by-election. Conservative councillors are brave to get involved with politically correct but potentially vote-losing ideas. Evidence shows 20-mile-per-hour zones encourage dangerous complacency among road users. This may partly explain why accidents in these zones are higher per mile than the rest of the country. Also, is it better for a child to be thrown clear at 30 miles per hour, regardless of possible greater primary and secondary injuries, or slide under the front at low speed, especially with commercial vehicles? And that was from Peter Stewart of Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
And finally is this letter from Paul Cooper, who says, transport plan must be credible. Sir, I write with reference to Councillor Perry's letter, re the proposed primary school at Westgate, chronicled December the 6th. Apart from foisting an untried educational experiment on Winchester, the basis of the initial decision to site the school at Westgate appeared largely a cost-saving measure, as well as going against the majority wishes from the initial consultation exercise. However, the immediate concern is the proposed transport plan. Anyone who chooses to be in Cheriton Road at start and close of the school day will be aware of the chaos that reigns for the best part of an hour, with double parking, bus movements, 4x4s blocking drives, and children weaving their way through cars. It's a car crash literally waiting to happen. To this, we are to add 420 further pupils, almost 50% more, with the associated vehicle movements. When questioning councillors, they talked about encouraging children to walk or ride to school, unlikely for the under nines, and then staggering hours. How will that help when there may be siblings in the senior school? Will parents sit outside waiting for the second school opening, jamming the roads yet further? In my view, the proposals are nothing short of a sticking plaster to get the proposal through the planning process. I am a great enthusiast for Westgate, having had three children attend there and having been a member of the governing body. But if this new school is to proceed, the transport plan must be credible, taking account of all parties and subject to critical review. If a genuine workable plan cannot be supported, then the decision should be reconsidered in that light. That final letter is from Paul Cooper, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Next we have the items of historical interest from previous editions of the Hampshire Chronicle. That we have two items from each of 200 years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago and 25 years ago.
From 200 years ago, 1812. At Winchester Petty Sessions, Mr. W.K. of Southampton was fined £20 for unlawfully performing divine service to a congregation illegally assembled on the Turnpike Road between the two churches at Headbourne Worthy and Kingsworthy, during the time of divine service at the latter and within hearing of it. This conviction should be known throughout the country, it being an offence not only in the performers, but also the attendants on such unlawful occasions. And the second letter. Saturday night, a young lady living in Millbank Street, the niece of the mistress of the house, rose, it is supposed in her sleep, and threw herself from the window of the third floor. Though much bruised, she had not a bone broken. On the same night, another young lady, residing with her mother in Sloane Street, threw herself from the one pair of back window stairs. No, I better do that again. That's completely wrong. Saturday night, a young lady living in Millbank Street, the niece of the mistress of the house, rose, it is supposed in her sleep, and threw herself from the window of the third floor. Though much bruised, she had not a bone broken. On the same night, another young lady, residing with her mother in Sloane Street, threw herself from the one pair of stairs back window. Her back was broken, and she died on Sunday morning.
And these are from 100 years ago, 1912. In committee on the Criminal Law Amendment Bill in the House of Lords on Monday, a proposal to disallow the use of the lash for procuration was rejected by the majority of 77, only 11 peers voting for it. Lord Eversley spoke for the amendment, saying, "I detest the crimes at which this clause is aimed, and I agree that no punishment which the state thinks fit to apply to these criminals is too severe for them. The only question is whether there is reason to believe flogging will be efficacious as a deterrent." At Winchester City Bench, Joseph Clark of No Fixed Abode pleaded guilty to being found drunk at the White Horse Cannon Street the previous night. George J. Curzon, landlord, stated that as the prisoner was drunk, he asked him to leave, but he refused and he sent for a constable. Prisoner said he was sorry and asked to be given a chance, stated that he had been drinking and spending money for several weeks.
These two are from 50 years ago, 1962. The first one is this. Parts of Winchester, Rumsey and the village of North Baddesley were plunged into darkness for an hour on Monday following breaks in the electricity supply circuits. The Winchester failure was caused by broken insulators on the cross-country line carrying the supply from Nursling to Oliver's Battery. Occurring soon after 6 p.m, it forced shops and businesses working late to deal with a Christmas rush to close in darkness. Secondly, Hampshire County Council has issued a statement denying reports, not from the Hampshire Chronicle, that it has dropped a plan to put fluorides into water, quotes, "because of the war being waged on us by small pressure groups," unquote. The statement says, "The council at its November meeting passed a resolution supporting the principal and asking the County Council's Association to press the Minister of Health to take action to promote the adoption of fluoridation."
And these are from 25 years ago, in 1987. The results of a decision dubbed a disaster by the committee which made it can be seen daily from the windows of surrounding properties. Winchester City Planning Committee approved plans for 2 four-storey houses at Clifton Road in June 1986. Amendments were made in April this year and work started. But the houses are being put up 2 metres closer than they ought to homes in West End Terrace. Planning Officer Andrew Blackwell said errors were made when they pegged the site out. "The effect on neighbours is quite significant," he said. And the second article? A change in priorities is needed to cope with the growing number of elderly people requiring hospital treatment. Wessex Regional Health Authority predicts that an extra £25 to £30 million a year will be needed for acute services for the elderly by the mid-1990s. Such a sum cannot be afforded without a major change of priorities involving all services provided by health authorities, said a report to members.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, the Chronicle comment, and that will be followed by first person.
And the editorial comment this week is headed, "Market Forces Bring World to Winchester." Winchester may well be winning the battle for the title of England's Christmas capital over the likes of Salisbury, Chichester, even York. Tens of thousands are now drawn from across the country by the market in the Cathedral Close, the ice rink, and the general ambience of the city centre. However, our report on the front page highlights how impressive footfall is not directly translating into massive sales. After all, if you're in the city on a coach trip from Milton Keynes or Gloucester, there's only so much you can carry. The national chains are heavily discounting to capture extra market share. But the shops that we spoke to, particularly the independents, were generally upbeat, with most reporting steady sales and several seeing improvement on 2011. Some people grumble about the commercialisation, but it has been a largely secular festival for many years. Whilst the Chronicle is aware that Christmas is much more than a marketing opportunity, its economic importance to the city is too crucial to be ignored. But let's hope the day never comes when Winchester and Salisbury cathedrals battle for the title of Best Christmas Services or Carol Concerts.
First Person This Week is written by Rosemary McMullen, and the title is Not That Kind of Granny. There's no room at the inn this year, so to speak, and I still have glowing memories of last year. So I was contented to be invited to spend a pre-Christmas weekend with my son in Cambridge. I have to admit I was glad of the sunshine in the glacial temperatures of the fens, and even gladder for the warming cuddles my grandchildren provided. Grace, although 9, still loves coming into bed with me first thing, and perks up her ears for another of my made-up Melindra stories. Melindra, my heroine, is a little girl who has all sorts of adventures. Having heard a fascinating radio talk about the effect different kinds of woods had on humans and their folklore, I decided to set my story in a dark wood. Grace was soon huddling under the covers as we both imagined trees bending to wave their branches in warning. Wolves, slipping round in a shadowy circle, forced her towards their campfire and a boiling cauldron. Just like Scheherazade, Melindra fobbed them off by telling stories all night until the water went cold and the wolves were too impatient to cook, so let her go. Little did I realise it, but it was the perfect preparation for our winter lights walk at Anglesey Abbey the next evening. The Jacobean-style house has 114 acres of gardens. The roots among the trees were studded with lights at ground level, but what was so magical were all the lanterns and strings of light hanging from branches. Glitter balls matched the stars overhead, and trees bathed in coloured light were reflected in the river. Firs, larches, beeches, spruces, you name it, were lit up singly or in groups with pink, red, gold and silver. The house itself was lit up in such a way that the children's shadows were magnified against its front. Great fun was had as they leapt around like ghosts until some bright spark decided to add sound effects. The resultant wolf howls had Grace clinging to me like a limpet. I must admit, the eeriness of the scene made me regret my morning story, and we both stampeded back to the lighted clearing where a band played jazz. We were soon bopping around with gusto. Grace turned the tables next morning with a dreadfully depressing tale of a granny who was old, nasty, and stank of cabbage. Nobody loved her. Reading with relish, Grace noticed my downcast expression and reassured me, "You're not that kind of granny. You're a good granny." I had to leave before the end, but have to admit I'm haunted by the vision of this poor old woman who is someone I dread the vicissitudes of old age may turn me into. I think I'm a pretty good granny, but just to be on the safe side, I will make sure I avoid the Brussels sprouts this Christmas and make sure Melindra's next adventure is a happy one.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
New sign on the line. A new old addition has been added as part of the restoration of Hockley Railway Viaduct near Winchester. The Friends of Hockley Viaduct have found and had restored an old signal post, which would have been similar to the one used on the structure itself before it closed in the 1960s. The signal post is now in place and is dedicated to the railwaymen who oversaw the passage of 16,000 trains in the 12 months up to D-Day in June 1944. The addition of the signal is a reminder of the viaduct's history as it continues to be restored for a new lease of life as a key part of the national cycle network, Route 23. Work on the project is progressing well, with several areas of the new route already being used by walkers, cyclists and runners. It is hoped that the final sections of the route, including that over the viaduct, will be completed by the end of February 2013.
And this is headed Hundreds Turn Out for Former Dean's Funeral. Winchester bade farewell to a former Dean of the Cathedral on Friday, December the 14th. A funeral for the Very Reverend Michael Till took place at the Cathedral, and mourners turned out in their hundreds. Those gathered at the service were welcomed by the current Dean, James Atwell, before prayers were led by the Very Reverend John Drury, former Dean of Christ Church, Oxford, who said of Mr. Till, "He was an abundantly kind and true soul." Mr. Till was then remembered in an address by long-time friend and colleague, Reverend Julian Barker. Mr. Barker said, "Spending time with him invariably involved laughing. He was both witty and profound. Imagination and creativity were two of his most notable qualities." Mr. Till was Dean of Winchester Cathedral from 1996 to 2005, having previously served as Archdeacon of Canterbury and in his earlier years as a chaplain of King's College, Cambridge. Winchester dignitaries, including Mayor of Winchester Frank Pearson and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, were in attendance. After the service, around 100 mourners braved heavy rain to observe Mr. Till's burial within the grounds of the cathedral. Born in 1935, Mr. Till, who died on December the 4th in Petworth, leaves a wife and two children.
Santa pays pub a flying visit. Father Christmas paid Winchester children an early visit last weekend. Santa gave presents to more than 30 Harestock children as they met him one by one at the March Hare pub in Prior's Dean Road. It was part of a Christmas party organised by landlady June Snadden after she got the idea from a visit to Scotland. "I was with my grandchildren in November," she said, "and saw an estate pub doing something similar, which was bringing the community together. It's sometimes challenging to do that here, as there are fewer army families now, but we want to bring the community to the pub and not just have things going on for adults, but children too." June, 47, has been at the pub for a year after transferring from the Baker's Arms in Winchester, with both pubs owned by Mike Sinker. She added, "It's a great pub here, and I've had a good year. It's been hectic, but we're getting the community involved and everyone seems to be having fun." City Councillor Eileen Berry, who lives in Harestock, was also at the party and praised the work of staff. She said, "They have all done a wonderful job here, and I support them fully. They work so hard, and I think this event proves that."
Hospital helipad proves its worth. It has saved the lives of hundreds of critically ill patients who may not have survived had it not been there. Southampton General Hospital's helipad is celebrating the first anniversary of its first helicopter landing, with medics knowing that it has meant the difference between life and death for so many. Since the launch a year ago, there have been 319 flights that have landed on the £1.2 million helipad on top of the hospital car park, averaging at almost one flight a day. It took a 15-year fight to install it, but having seen its success on a daily basis, those who campaigned for it have no doubt that it was worth the wait. Hopes for success were quickly realised on the day of the first liftoff, when the helipad was called into action for a second emergency within minutes of the first patient's landing. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has made the majority of landings, visiting a total of 206 times in the past 12 months, with the Coast Guard making up 13% of the landings.
And this is headed, Councillors Want Action on Care Funding Crisis. Hampshire councillors are calling for government action to tackle the care funding crisis for the elderly. The Tory majority on the County Council backed a motion by Councillor Alan Dowden, Lib Dem opposition spokesman for adult social care, who said the time for commissions and reports was over. He urged ministers to implement without delay the recommendations of Andrew Dilnut, an economist tasked by the Prime Minister with solving the problem of funding care for the elderly. Currently, only those with assets, including home, are worth less than £23,000 receive state help, forcing thousands to sell their homes to pay for care. Meanwhile, those who remain in their own properties face losing nearly all their savings to pay for home carers. Some pensioners in wheelchairs may have two carers visit four times a day. Councillor Dowden urged ministers to implement Dilnut's proposal for a cap on individual costs of £35,000 and to raise the threshold at which people have to contribute to their own care to £100,000. It is estimated that implementing the Dilnut proposals could cost more than £1.7 billion at a time of spending cuts. Councillor Dowden also called for extra funding to cope with the increased demand from a growing elderly population in particular, to provide more money for preventative services such as Meals on Wheels and extra care housing, that is, sheltered housing with support on site. Hampshire County Council leader Ken Thornber has published a letter to Jeremy Hunt, Secretary of State for Health, backing the unanimous call for urgent action. In it, he said, "We strongly urge the government to implement Dilnut's recommendation of a cap on an individual's contribution to their care costs, and also raising the upper threshold for means testing." He added, "We are aware of the need for the government to act prudently in the current climate. However, the country's social care challenges need to be tackled."
Cathedral choristers get their skates on. It's the annual sight that lets you know Christmas has well and truly arrived. 15 of Winchester Cathedral's boy choristers took a break from their busy schedule to skate on the city's ice rink in full dress. It has become a tradition for the girls and boys who will spend much of the festive period performing in cathedral concerts. And that small piece is accompanied by a wonderful photograph of choristers in their crimson cassocks in varying states of collapse. One or two are still standing, others are completely on the floor and rolling around. But what intrigues me particularly is the fact that the article says 15 of Winchester Cathedral's boy choristers, but I can only count 13. So I assume that maybe two of them have just sort of slid completely out of sight.
Woman hit by car waits 2 hours for ambulance. An elderly woman was left waiting for an ambulance for 2 hours after she was struck by a car in Winchester city centre. The woman, who has not been identified, was crossing Upper Brook Street just after 1:30 p.m. on Monday, December the 17th. She fell and was subsequently struck by a black Audi TT. The driver immediately stopped to assist the woman. Casey Mulcahy of Hairstock was driving home from work when she saw the accident. Her companion comforted the woman while they waited for an ambulance. She said, "I was just getting ready to go, and I only just saw her myself. I just feel really sorry for her." Although she was helped by police officers who were quickly on the scene, onlookers were aghast at the length of time it took for an ambulance to arrive. Paramedics arrived after an hour, but it was another hour before an ambulance arrived to take the patient to hospital, during which time the woman remained in the road. Self-employed maintenance man Trevor Allen, 45, was working on Upper Brook Street at the time of the accident. Mr. Allen said, "I think it's absolutely disgusting that in this day and age, in the middle of Winchester, someone can lay on the ground like that for a good hour and a half before an ambulance turns up." South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust confirmed that they had been called to an incident at 1:33 p.m. and could not comment in detail as an investigation is underway. However, a spokesman for the service said, "We will be in contact with the patient to discuss the incident with her and to apologise for the delay which she has had."
And this article is entitled "Crash Car Packs Potent Message." Hampshire Police launched its first smashed drink drive roadshow with a crashed car display in Winchester. Officers joined County Council road safety team staff in Market Street outside Marks and Spencer's between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. last Thursday. They spoke to passers-by about the dangers of drink driving, including how many hours it takes to sober up after a night drinking. Council staff were also on the road with a blue Vauxhall Corsa, which was involved in a drink drive crash on November the 13th, 2011, in which the 23-year-old female driver was killed instantly. She was four times over the limit. The driver's family has given permission for police to take the car around busy night spots to warn people, particularly 20 to 24-year-olds, who accounted for 22.9% of drink drive arrests last year. The young driver's father, who asked not to be named, said, "Losing my daughter, my children's sister, has devastated our family, and that feeling of loss will never leave us. If getting her car out there on the street for all to see stops just one person from drink driving, then that's a comfort to us." It is part of a Christmas campaign which sees Hampshire's roads policing units put more time and resources into tackling drink driving than ever before. Sergeant Jay Hughes said, "Drink driving is totally preventable. It's a choice. You can choose to drive home knowing you might be over the limit, or you can choose not to take the risk and find alternative transport. This campaign isn't about lecturing people. We shouldn't need to do that. This vehicle tells the story. It illustrates the catastrophic consequences of drink driving. If you still want to risk it after that, then you just better hope it's not your car we're using next year."
Wall is a danger, warns pensioner. A Winchester resident has urged the County Council to safeguard pedestrians from a damaged wall. Raymond Marsh, 82, of Courtney Road, Abbots Barton, says he has been campaigning for years to get a flint wall in Worthy Road replaced. Mr. Marsh, a retired chartered engineer, said the wall is being slowly pushed towards the road by earth movement and tree growth, particularly during wet weather. Part of the wall collapsed 2 weeks ago, and Mr. Marsh said he was worried it could happen again and injure a passerby. "I do not want it falling on a child. I walk down here with my grandson sometimes and I worry," he said. "For 3 years, I have been pointing out the damage to the County Council, who are responsible for the safety of the roads and pavement. If this wall collapses again, a tree could fall down and hit a car." Mr. Marsh wants the wall torn down so the earth and trees can be removed, with a new concrete wall to replace it afterwards. Councillor Mel Kendall, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said the council did not believe the wall posed significant threat to pedestrians. He said, "We are aware that the wall on private land along Worthy Road, between the junctions of Northlands Drive and Lankshill Road in Winchester, has collapsed in places in the past and been repaired by landowner. Mr. Marsh has raised concerns about the current state of the wall with us, and having inspected it, we do not feel that those using the public pavement and road alongside it are in any immediate danger." He added, We have written to the landowner's managing agents, however, to report Mr. Marsh's and our concerns, and we understand that further work to secure the wall has been commissioned by them and is in progress.
Weather hopes for wine growers. Wet summer saw harvests sharply down. Hampshire wine growers will be hoping the weather in 2013 proves kinder than the summer of 2012. Harvests were sharply down after the wet summer with little sunshine, but local vineyards are well prepared for any poor weather. Patrick Westrop, estate manager of Danebury Vineyards near Stockbridge, said, "Danebury Vineyards has been making fine English white wines since 1990, so we are used to the vagaries of the English weather and the effects it can have on the harvest. Fortunately, good years outweigh the bad, and the quality of the wine remains constant." Danebury harvested only one out of the four grape varieties it grows, and had the job done in a day. Bearing in mind this harvest will not be ready for drinking until 2014, fortunately, previous harvests have been bountiful and of top quality, so we have plenty of sparkling wine and white wine in the cellar for our customers, said Mr. Westrop. At one of Hampshire's newest vineyards, Hattingley Valley, near Medstead, the poor summer also caused problems. Simon Checkitts, manager, said about the weather, "Challenging would be a good word. It was extraordinary, the like of which we haven't seen for 30 to 40 years. We did harvest, unlike a lot of vineyards around Hampshire. The harvest was down, although it is too early to say by how much." Hattingley is on course to market its first wine, 6,500 bottles of 2010 vintage, in September 2013. The company has increased the capacity of its winery at Weald and so boosted its contract work for other vineyards. Mr. Checkitts said as Hattingley had invested in machinery, other farmers and landowners may be more tempted to set aside land for vines, as there is no need for expensive investment in plant. An information evening held earlier this year was attended by between 30 to 40 people. Hattingley now has more than 10 contracts with other growers and hopes to boost the figure in 2013.
And the heading for this one is Aladdin Casts Magical Spell. There's magic in the air in Winchester this month, thanks to the Christmas pantomime Aladdin. Writer-director James Barry takes the classic tale back to its roots in China, setting the quest for the lamp in Old Peking. This year's effort at the Theatre Royal features a strong cast who play their stereotypical roles very well, even if the jokes and plot are corny. Samantha Jenkinson made an entertaining Aladdin, treading the line between cheeky scamp and brave hero as she strives for fame, fortune, and the love of the beautiful Princess Jasmine, Felicity McCormack. Standing in the way is John DeVille as the villain Abenaza, the highlight of the show, embracing the audience's boos and giving grief back through some great ad-libbing. It is always a pleasure to see him on the stage, particularly in the first act, when he carried much of the humour as the show got off to a slow start. Also brilliant was Julian Eardley as the definitive panto dame Widow Twankey, staying just the right side of the line with a number of risque jokes, while his double act with son Wishy Washy, Steve Ritchie, earned chuckles as the pair mocked each other as only family can. Carly Hughes and Amir Boutrous also deserve praise as the snooty Empress and cocky genie, respectively, even if the latter was annoying in his dual role as Chief of Police. Stunning special effects were promised and delivered, particularly the magic carpet scene, while the original music by Simon Slater was terrific. It might grate on adults after a while, but it's good family entertainment and a perfect treat for children this Christmas.
Teenager gets 18-month ban. A Winchester teenager caught drink driving has been banned for 18 months. Amy Russell, 19, of Somerville Road, Kingsworthy, was stopped by police on October the 31st whilst driving a Vauxhall Corsa in Downs Road, South Wanston, Basingstoke magistrates heard. Her reading of 81 micrograms of alcohol per 100 millilitres of breath was more than double the legal limit. Magistrates fined her £200 and told her to pay a £20 victim surcharge and £85 costs.
Planners OK plans for budget hotel at Winnall, but councillors fear even more congestion at notorious junction. Civic chiefs have approved a new budget hotel for Winchester. City councillors approved plans for a 101-bed hotel last week to be built next to the city fire station in Winnall Manor Road, Winnall. Planners recommended the development to a planning committee last Thursday, December the 13th, arguing that it would address a shortage of beds in the city. Stuart Deering of Reef Estates, which made the application on Premier Inn's behalf, said the hotel would be a real benefit to Winchester and create 58 jobs. Over the course of the past 15 months, we have worked very closely with officers to create an acceptable and sustainable development. This development will act as a stimulant for tourism, business and job creation. There are significant benefits for tourism, and the hotel will extend opportunities for visitors to spend money off-site, and it will not adversely impact upon traffic flow in either direction. Eloise Appleby, Councillor Assistant Director for Economic Prosperity, added, "Winchester has long been a place that people want to visit and then head out to other attractions in the New Forest. We can sustain more than one hotel, and if a central location came up, we have good reason to believe that could also be a good development for the city." Councillors welcomed the development as a boost for city business. Councillor David McLean said, "Tourism, jobs, destination, economy and the university, this application will support them all, and I congratulate the work of our officers to bring this to fruition." Councillor Ray Pearce added, "This is a golden opportunity for getting people to stay in Winchester for one or two days." But concerns were raised over increasing existing traffic problems in Eastern Lane and Winnall Manor Road, including parked cars blocking the road and traffic jams tailing back to Junction 9 of the M3. Councillor Ernie Jeffs said, "Winnall Manor Road Junction is notorious when Eastern Lane gets jammed. Anyone coming down Eastern Lane into Winnall Manor Road will find it very difficult." HCC Senior Engineer Ben Clifton said the county was planning to address traffic problems at Junction 9, particularly with the A34 junction. He added that the 89-space hotel car park would be more than enough to meet customer needs. The approval is subject to legal agreement, including full travel and car park management plans, and a contribution of £46,000 from the applicant to improve cycling infrastructure in Winchester. The City Council has also been considering a hotel on the Chesil Street open-air car park, but so far no definite plans have been forthcoming.
And this article by Andrew Napier is entitled "Sheep and Pony Killed by Dogs, Attack at Alsford Road Nature Reserve." Poachers are suspected to have caused the deaths of a sheep and a pony at a nature reserve on the edge of Winchester. The sheep was savaged at Magdalen Hill Down, and a pony died after injuring itself, possibly after having been scared by rampaging dogs. The sheep attack is thought to have happened sometime between 2 p.m. on Saturday, December the 15th, and early Sunday morning on the part of the reserve off Alsford Road opposite Lee House Hospital. Reserves officer Jane Chapman said, "I received a phone call early on Sunday morning from one of our regular dog walkers who came across the body of the sheep. It was a very distressing sight, and there was evidence that the dog or dogs had attacked and worried the sheep before killing it with bite marks and puncture wounds to the throat and neck." Miss Chapman said, "I had a report that there was a dead horse on the public footpath that runs from Magdalen Hill down to the A31. The pony had been kept with other horses in what is known as the old allotments adjacent to Magdalen. The owner has been informed." Miss Chapman said it appeared dogs had chased the horse, which in fear and panic had jumped the fence at the bottom of the allotment field. There is no clear landing on the other side, and being on a steep incline, the horse suffered serious injuries. There was evidence that it had managed to drag itself a few feet before dying of the injuries it sustained. The Shetland sheep that died was one of this year's lambs and belonged to a flock owned by Dr. Rue Eakins, the Itchen Valley Grazing Project Officer with the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. The flock is on loan to Butterfly Conservation, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Branch, which manages Magdalen Hill Down Reserve. Miss Chapman added, "We have clear signs across the downs advising dog owners where the cattle and sheep are grazing, and that dogs must be kept on a lead at all times. Conservation work relies on livestock grazing, and the loss of any animal is both upsetting and unnecessary. Failing to keep a dog under control where livestock are present can attract a fixed penalty of £75. The owners of dogs that worry livestock can be fined up to £1,000.
Hotel helps homeless. A Winchester restaurant has helped raise more than £3,000 for city's homeless. The Hotel du Vin hosted a Christmas fundraiser for the Trinity Winchester, raising £3,300 for the charity, which helps around 600 annually. The event featured champagne and canapés in the drawing room, along with a charity auction organised by Liz Pauls, fundraising manager for Trinity Winchester. Liz said, "As the economic difficulties continue, our services are needed more than ever. We rely on the generosity of our supporters to enable us to offer practical and emotional support. We aim to promote positive, fulfilling lifestyles, emotional well-being, and long-term changes for those experiencing the effects of homelessness, substance misuse, mental ill health, poverty, domestic violence, unemployment, and social isolation." She thanked Hotel du Vin for its support. Brand director Mike Warren responded, "We are pleased to support Trinity Winchester Charity's good work devoted to helping people in our community who are homeless and vulnerably housed in Hampshire, particularly at Christmas time."
Councillors veto waste plant plan, saying no justification for having this here. Winchester City Council has strongly objected to a new power station near Micheldever. A planning committee last Thursday, December the 13th, examined plans for the waste management plant at Micheldever Station before it goes before the County Council for a decision next year. Applicant, Clean Power, says the site off Overton Road would bring together autoclaves, pyrolysis and anaerobic digesters to convert waste into energy. It would process 154,000 tonnes a year, two-thirds municipal and industrial, and a third green or food waste. The site would operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and would employ some 30 people. Proposals also include an office, visitor centre, new access road, weighbridge, solar panels and landscaping. But ward councillors and residents encouraged the committee to object to the plans. Councillor Malcolm Wright said, A government study into this technology identifies a risk of toxic fumes, and it is only 250 metres away from houses. Councillor Stephen Godfrey added, "I would like to see more renewable energy schemes come forward and put in place. However, it must not be at the price of the countryside or the character of the area. There is no justification for having this plant there, and it goes against our policies." Adrian Bates, chairman of Mitchell Dever Action Group, set up to fight the scheme, said the plant would give no benefit to the community. He said, "This is a power station that runs on waste and food, and to be profitable it has to import as much waste as it can. But it will in no way diminish the amount of waste the community will be producing." Planners and councillors agreed and had serious concerns over a variety of issues, including traffic problems and health hazards. Councillor Eileen Berry said, "It's clear to me in simple terms, this proposal has no redeeming features at all. There would also be dangerous gases and liquids at a site very close to a train line, and if there is a major accident, we would be left with a gas cloud." Councillor Barry Lipscomb added, "I think we should make this a strong objection, so that if it goes to an appeal, it cannot be said that we did not have concerns about particular factors, such as the noxious emissions." The committee unanimously voted to object to the scheme, and their views will be included in the County Council's final decision. The decision was expected in the spring, but is likely to be delayed after the county asked for further environmental studies of the area.
And this is entitled "College All Set for a Bumper Crop of Lambs." Witness the miracles of nature firsthand at Sparshot College next month. The college is opening its doors for its 9th annual lambing weekend on January the 26th to 27th. Visitors should be in for a busy day, as ultrasound scans have revealed the 400 ewes are expecting 766 lambs, 84 triplets, 218 twins and 78 singles. Shepherd John Garrett, who works with the sheep whilst they are birthing, with help from college students getting hands-on experience, said, "We regularly have visitors who come back year on year, as there aren't many opportunities for the general public to get this close to nature. It is fascinating to watch lambs being born, which of course prompts many questions, some of which can be quite unusual." Along with the lambing, visitors will also be able to watch milking, dog displays and meet horses and donkeys, while face painting, crafts and machinery displays are also on offer. College staff ask visitors to wash their hands thoroughly after touching any animals or their habitats. But pregnant women are asked not to attend, as lambing flocks carry a disease risk that can cause miscarriages. Dogs are not permitted on site either. The college opens 9:30 to 3:30 p.m. with entry £5 per adult, £3.50 for children and free for under threes. Family tickets for two adults and two children cost £15.
And to end this recording of the Talking Newspaper, we have a couple of items of seasonal interest. The first one about Christmas trees, and then reminiscences of Christmas in Winchester 60 years ago.
And this first one is entitled "The Christmas Tradition That Keeps On Growing." Life must have been grim under Oliver Cromwell's Puritan regime during the Commonwealth of the 1650s. Even Christmas was abolished. With the Restoration in 1660, however, it was revived, and over the years became more of an excuse for a secular festival than a religious celebration. The Christmas tree is a mystery. It became established in medieval Germany, perhaps because December the 24th is the name day of Adam and Eve, who are associated with the tree of paradise and its forbidden fruit. Trees were then hung with baubles representing the apples and biscuits or gingerbread, representing the communion wafer and ultimate redemption. It was Prince Albert who introduced the Christmas tree to Britain. In 1848, the Illustrated London News published an engraving of the royals celebrating at Windsor with a large tree, and the tradition spread fast. Charles Dickens wrote a short story, A Christmas Tree, in 1850. The American author Eugene Field wrote a children's story in which the Christmas tree becomes a symbol of the cross on which Jesus was crucified. In this context, perhaps an Easter tree might be more appropriate, but it's an interesting mix of traditions. In Germany, an indigenous species was used, so the first decorated here was the Scots pine. But this was later abandoned because it's slow growing and not particularly beautiful when 6 feet tall. As spruce found favour, farmers grew a few hundred locally. That was fine until the trade became more centralised, and most are now sold through retail outlets, garden centres and DIY stores. 5 years ago, prices were low and there was little profit in trees. This was exacerbated when the European Commission decided land planted to Christmas trees was not eligible for the single payment. Many small-scale plantations were dug up, creating a shortage. Prices rose to perhaps double what they were 10 years ago, and more have been planted, mainly by large-scale producers rather than as farm diversification. This is relieving the shortage, but larger trees are very scarce and are worth a lot. However, with demand outstripping supply, there is the temptation to sell a 6-foot tree today rather than wait until it grows larger. With the first hard frosts, trees become dormant, and this is the time to cut. Trees have been cut in November or even October in the past, but autumns are warmer now, and early cut trees tend to lose their needles before Christmas, so mid-November is the earliest time to cut. While they will be stored outdoors, they will end up in a centrally heated hall or sitting room. Norway spruce rapidly loses its needles when treated in that manner. Other species have grown in popularity as centrally heated houses have become hotter and drier. Abies nordmanniana, or silver fir, will drop its needles in adverse condition, but keeps them longer than spruce. It is also slower growing, ready for harvest 8 to 10 years after planting on a field scale, double the time frame. The Nordman is also known as the Caucasian fir, from which it originates. The seed is grown on in Denmark and planted at 3 years old or 6 inches tall. Now, 90% of all Christmas trees grown are Nordmans, while some growers remain loyal to the Norway spruce.
And finally, this is from the Hampshire Chronicle, Saturday, December the 27th, 1952. For what, one wonders, will Christmas 1952 be remembered? For a large proportion of people, it will be memorable as the time when Christmas Day so fell that it ushered in not the usual 2-day, but a 4-day holiday. Despite the variable weather which ushered in the festive season, there has not been a white Christmas in Hampshire for many years, Christmas 1952 promised to be one of the brightest and best since pre-war days. The shops, with their plentiful supply of Christmas fare and presents, were reminiscent of the good old days, and did a brisk trade, with large crowds thronging the shopping centres. In all departments, the post office has been busier this year than last, and on Monday, a record number of letters were stamped, 120,000 260. The previous record was 105,470 on December the 20th, 1950. The number of casual employees working this year was 127, mainly local schoolboys and university students, and two extra vans were being utilised. Winchester butchers and fishmongers have had more smaller turkeys for sale this year, but one gathered that they would like to see even more of this type of bird to offer to the public. They have found that birds weighing between £9 and £15 are in great demand for the normal family earning a normal wage, and with the decreasing size of modern ovens, it is often impossible to cook a large bird. Nearly all the small birds were gone by Tuesday, but many of the 17 to 20 pound turkeys were not selling well. During the past week, the usual Christmas tree, the gift of George Cooper, Bart, was transferred from Hursley Park to the west end of Winchester Cathedral. There it was decorated by electricians over the weekend, ready to form the reception place for gifts of money, toys, clothing, indeed anything of use to children in less fortunate areas of the world. The bus companies reported that there had been the usual seasonal increase in both passenger and parcel traffic, and in the case of King Alfred services, extra buses had been run throughout the week.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to the various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Matt Avery.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. And from everyone here at the Winchester Talking Newspaper, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. There will be no Talking Newspaper between Christmas and New Year. We will be recording the next edition on Friday, the 4th of January. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.